everyone. This is Bev Marshall here, and I've had the honor and privilege of being married to Drew Marshall for almost 20 years. 12 of the best years of my life. Have you ever noticed just how sensitive of a man he is?
I was crying with him when he was crying because...
Hey, hold on. We were crying. We're men here.
He may not know how to fix stuff around the house, but at least he knows women's fashion.
Is it the way women are dressing? I mean, I know I'm going to be labeled sexist by even suggesting this. You know, we can wear whatever we want. Well, I got to tell you, there's a lot of skimpy-looking stuff out there.
I know he thinks he's Dr. Phil and genuinely seems like he understands us women.
Women seem to be driven more by emotions than men do, and men tend to be a little bit more analytical. And I'm not a sexist jerk, so don't write me emails saying I hate women or something like that.
But don't worry, ladies. I've trained him well.
Driving, turning your radio down, and talking on the phone. You must be a woman, because a guy couldn't do all that.
So if you're looking for sound professional guidance, well, there's always the guests he interviews. Tune in Saturdays between 1 and 5 for The Drew Marshall Show, right here on Joy 1250.
Listening to The Drew Marshall Show, Canada's most listened to spiritual talkback program.
Well, joining us now in studio is Christy Healy. Of course, Christy was married to one of the world's most legendary guitar players who unfortunately passed away from cancer only a few months ago at the age of 41, leaving behind their 3-year-old son and 13-year-old daughter, and of course, Christy. And over the years, Jeff had played with the likes of Stevie Ray Vaughan, Buddy Guy, B.B. King, ZZ Top, Eric Clapton. The list goes on and on. JeffHealy.com is the website. And it is a privilege to have you here in the studio, Christy. Thank you for agreeing to do this.
Well, thank you for having me.
Quite an unbelievable time the last few months probably have been for you. I mean, and you and I have talked over the phone a couple times. There's also moving involved here.
Yes,
and
I get the keys to our new place next Friday, so haven't even packed yet.
Oh, man.
We're not moving that day, but it's been a bit of a whirlwind the last 6 months, and at sometimes a bit of a fog, too. So we're just taking it a day at a time.
Hmm. This interview is as a result of me listening to the Bill Carroll show one morning. One of the best in radio, I got to say. And during his show, he interviewed you, and it was the morning after Jeff passed.
Yes.
You said something along the lines of, he said, you know, how are you going to get through this? And you said something along the lines of, well, you know, we're going to basically stand on our faith or something like that.
That's exactly what I said.
Yeah. And that just triggered. And I'm not sure why. I mean, you know, you watch the awards shows these days and everybody's thanking God for this, that, and the other thing, and God and faith and whatever else. And that doesn't mean necessarily that they're, you know, Jesus people or whatever, right? But I was interested in this, in all people's spiritual journey, but I was interested in particular what you said that day. And I thought, I wonder what, you know, what that means, standing on your faith.
Well, over... specifically the last 6 months that Jeff was alive, our faith changed quite a bit. And we learned what it was to stand on your faith, to really stand by what you've learned and how you've come to trust God. And no matter what your circumstances are, to still trust in God, no matter how bad they may seem. Because in everything that we do, we learned to trust that anything bad that was happening to us was not a result of God. So I knew that I could trust in God to get me through anything. And Jeff knew that he could too, right up until the very end.
You said 6 months prior to his death, up until that time, you know, there were some God things happening.
There were a lot of changes. I mean, Jeff and I have been Christians for some time, and he grew up in a very warm, loving Christian home on both sides of his family, and I did as well. But something changed somewhere around 6 months before he passed away, and it gave us, I think, more hope in our spirit than anything than we'd ever had.
What changed? Is it definable?
It is. We started to learn more about what God's will is for us and how he is such a loving God. People sometimes make the mistake of assuming that God takes people away, God gives you a disease and it's a blessing in disguise, and we don't believe that at all. And I've had friends or relatives, you know, say to me, you know, someday you'll understand why God had to take him early, and he didn't. He didn't. I was listening to a couple of links that you had sent me before, and specifically the Allen family. And something that Mr. Allen said at the end of his interview with you goes strictly to what I believe, and that is the devil will steal, kill, and destroy. God did not do this to Jeff. The devil did. And people always wonder, why do bad things happen to good people? It's because they're good people.
Right.
And unfortunately, that's the way it is for both sides. I mean,
but you know that there's skeptics that would be listening to this and they would say something like, yeah, but if there is a good God and he's supposed to be in control, that means he allowed the devil to do this, so ipso facto, God did it.
We make our own choices. We make our own decisions. And there will always be things that we don't understand. I've been struggling off and on for the last 6 months saying, okay, we believed. Why did it happen? And there will always be something that I don't know, because for me, God will always know the answer to everything. And there will be a time where I know the answer to that. And it probably won't be while I'm still here. But eventually, I'll get the answer, and I'm coming to accept that with a little more peace every day. There will always be things that we don't understand, but what I do know for sure, without a doubt in my heart, is that there is no way that our God would do this to a child of his own that he loves. And that, I mean, that's the whole reason that he sent his son down to die for us, so we wouldn't have to suffer. So why would he do that if he would do it to every other one of his children?
In the studio with Christy Healy. Christy, if I could just sort of recap the spiritual journey thing. You know, you said that you and Jeff kind of grew up in Christian families, Christian homes or whatever, and then it sounded like you kind of wandered away from the faith of your family a little bit, not in maybe huge ways, but you did sort of both go your own independent ways.
We did.
Yeah.
We did.
And then kind of nominally then came back, and then it turned into a full-blown, okay, we're really Jesus people? Like, you know what I mean? Help me understand those transitions.
I think we were for a long time. It's just the way we looked at our faith changed. I mean, we believed in God. We believed that Jesus was the Son of God. We believed that he did die for our sins. But the extent and how we started to understand the Bible and what God was trying to tell us through that word changed. And it changed through certain messages that we came to understand through information from a friend of mine. And a friend of mine and her husband have been members of a church in the States. And when Jeff was going through some treatment, we were given some CDs by a friend of mine and said, you know what, just have a listen, or, you know, take a look, and it might give you some peace, and it may not, but it's worth a shot. So I did, and I started listening to these, and I started to understand more what the Bible was telling us. And for the first time, I could actually sit down and read the Bible and understand the words that I was reading. I mean, so many people sit down and they read the Bible and go, okay, I kind of get it. You know, he's good. He loves us. There's miracles, but I don't really understand half of what I just read. Hmm. I mean, that's the way I was for years. And I started to really get it. I started to understand, and then I started to be able to apply it to my own life and see it in our lives. And it's kind of like a light bulb went on, and we went, oh, that's it. And it was great. And it came at a time that I think we needed more strength than we'd ever needed. We needed more faith, we needed more peace, and we needed courage.
You know what I keep thinking about? I keep thinking about people in your life who know you as, you know, Jeff and Christy Healy, the rock star, and then the guitar guy, and then you're jazz singing, you know, the whole, okay, you're entertainer, show business, and all these people that didn't really know much about this Jesus side of your life. And I can just hear them going,
oh, yeah, I can guarantee
you. Whoa, hold on a second.
I can guarantee you that there may be friends of ours listening to this right now that are thinking, I am completely out to lunch. But it doesn't matter to me. At the same time, we also didn't force our beliefs on anybody. And that's something that I learned.
So you didn't turn into a raving evangelical lunatic?
No.
Thank God.
Well, I mean, something that friends of ours, the same friends that gave us the DVDs, I was talking with one of them over the weekend last week, and he had said, sometimes you feel the need to tell the person what you think they need to hear, but it's not always what you tell them. It's how much they're willing to receive. Mm. And it makes a huge difference, because if someone doesn't want to hear it, they're not going to.
Christy, do you think you bought into the Jesus stuff more because Jeff's health was worse? In other words, it was that crutch phenomena?
No. It started before then. I mean, learning more about how to understand the Bible and understand more of what God wants for us happened at that time. But we took our faith very seriously. It was extremely important to us, and it was implemented in our lives in many ways. It just became stronger over the years. And I know some people have this perspective of, oh, well, you know, when you're down on your luck, that's when you turn to God. Do you really believe?
Yeah, there's no atheists in foxholes, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
And it wasn't like that for us. I think both of us always had the belief. I know shortly before I met Jeff, my belief became a lot stronger. And this was before I met Jeff. Hmm. And I think Jeff always had a very strong belief in God. It was just deeply rooted in him. And then when we met, I was very open about my beliefs. And that, I think, struck him as, I'm hoping, refreshing. It didn't scare him off. And that was good. That was good. And I think that allowed us to be more open about what our beliefs were. And I think in today's day, to be a Christian or to be a person of faith in general, people like to tiptoe because we're afraid of being judged. And I think we both reached a point where we weren't afraid of being judged anymore.
Whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah. I often wonder about those who, especially those who are, what's the phrase, visually impaired? Like, are you allowed to say blind, or is that?
He always said he was blind.
Okay, just wanted to, let's get that one out of the way. Blind people have something the rest of us don't, and it's something that's not easily defined. To the point where, I often have these conversations with people just sitting around having a pint or whatever. You say, well, what sense would you, if you had to lose one sense, what would it be? Mine was common sense, obviously, but vision. None of my friends have said vision. I'm the only one that has said, if I had to lose something, it would be vision. Well, what about, you know, your kids? No, my kids aren't going to change a whole lot anymore. They're 19 and 17. You know, I can still hear and sense and feel and love and blah, 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 blah. And I've seen pretty much what I really want to have seen. And the problem, though, with me is that I think I've missed so much because I've been so visually stimulated. I've missed everything else because of the dominance of visual stimulation. And so what I'm trying to get to here is that I wonder about those who are blind, and if they can tap into the sacred possibly easier than the rest who are distracted visually. Does that make any sense?
It does in a way. When people are distracted visually by what's around them, sometimes they miss it. And, you know, for Jeff, him listening to people speak or play music or even the wind, I mean, he could walk down the hallway and know if a door was open or shut. And it did make a huge difference. I think when I would watch something that I would enjoy, I would also take in visually what I was seeing. But he was listening strictly to what the person was saying. And sometimes I would have to go back and re-listen to things because he would mention something and I'd think, well, no, they didn't say that, did they? And he'd say, yeah, they said it. And I'd have to rewind and I'd, because I'm so busy taking in everything around me, including what the person's saying, that you do miss it.
I don't know when it's going to happen. I'm hoping it'll happen prior to the end of this year. I actually plan on, I don't know how I'm going to do this either. I haven't thought it through all the way, but I'd like to go 7 days blind.
And wow.
I've thought about this for a long, long time, but I need to do it. It's just, I don't know why, but I just need to do it, and I'll report in after that experiment is over.
Well, I'm trying to think the year that we had the blackout. I believe that was 2003.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my first experience of having to make my way through our house in complete, you know, pitch dark. And I'm stumbling my way to the bathroom, and all of a sudden I hear a voice in the dark, "Honey, do you need some help?" So he had to help me through the blackout because he was the only one who knew how to get through the house without falling down.
Nice.
And it takes a bit of practice, but there are events, actually, that they have, fundraisers. There's something called the blind ball. And they have, you know, they have a ball, and people go to it, and they're blindfolded for the entire evening. They dance, they eat dinner, they have people.
That's a great way to pick up, if you're single, I think that's it. Seriously, because you get to the heart of the person, not their aesthetic stuff. Anyway, okay, all right. Speaking of meeting and the whole romance thing, I came across something that said, was it someone in Jeff's band when you and Jeff met? Did this dialogue happen where Jeff said, "Hey, is she hot? Because I really like her."
Well, I don't know, actually.
Okay, I'm just not sure if that ever came up in conversation. Might have been one of those fabled
possible,
myths.
It's possible. I don't know the wording that he used, but I'm sure. I mean, anybody that he met, he would always ask someone what they look like. But that said, I mean,
yeah.
I think, he wanted to know because he lived in a visual world, most likely. But it's possible.
Christy Hall became Christy Healy at Casa Loma.
Yes.
Friday, July 18th, 2003, not that long ago.
No, it wasn't very long ago.
You still thinking back to that day?
Yeah, I ended up downtown driving my son around for a nap because we were having an open house. And I drove by Casa Loma, and it's the first time I'd driven by. It's the first time I'd ever been by Casa Loma since we were married. And, of course, it's the film festival's going on, and they've got cameras and everything everywhere, yeah. So I just quickly drove by it. But it hadn't been very long, but it was a little difficult driving by there. But I remember the entire day, as blurry as it might be, but I still remember it.
Mm.
And it was very hot, and we had a lot of fun. And that Jeff was about having a lot of fun. He was about laughing.
1966 is a good year.
Yes.
It's also the year I was born. But he was diagnosed within his first year with this rare form of cancer. Retinoblastoma, is that how we say it?
Yes.
As a child, of course, this meant he lost his sight before the age of one, around that time period. And now, he didn't know this, apparently, but this also predisposed him to other cancers later in life?
It did. It has to do with the genetic mutation in his body, the RB gene that's mutated, which caused the cancer. And when you have, the way I understand it, when you have one cancer, it predisposes your body to other cancers,
sure.
Some more specifically than others, which in this case was sarcoma cancer.
The eyes were removed surgically at that age?
Yes, they were. The first one, I believe, at 7 months, and the other one at 11 months.
Man, No, I mean, I'm sorry, but no kid should have to go through that.
No, they shouldn't. But he was really blessed by wonderful parents. He was adopted at 3 months old, and his mother was a nurse, and his father a firefighter, and they noticed that something was not right, and they attended to it right away. And he was really blessed being adopted into a family like that.
I was also adopted into an unbelievable family, and only in the last few years have I found out who my birth parents are. And I've started to think, you know, we have children now, and well, we've had them for a while, but back when I was doing this search for the adopted parents, I was thinking about the genetic aspect, and if there's any health problems with my children, I'd like to know what came down the pipe. But Jeff wasn't able to know that information?
He eventually did.
He did?
He did. When Jeff and his first wife were pregnant with their daughter, Rachel, they needed to find out if there were any possible risks. He knew, having retinoblastoma, that genetically, because he had bilateral retinoblastoma, there was a 50% chance that their child would have it. And so they started doing detective work. Jeff was lucky enough to be adopted with his full birth certificate, so he knew his full name when he was adopted. Hmm. And they just tracked it. And they managed to find his birth mother and ask a few questions. They didn't find his birth father, but as far as his birth mother knew, there wasn't anything in either side of the family.
Laura and Linda, his sisters?
Yep.
They were adopted too?
Yeah, they're four years younger. They're twins.
Okay.
And they were adopted as well.
Wow. I'd like to meet his dad and stepmom. They just sound like neat people. I don't know. Adopt three children? You know, as I think back on Jeff's life, and I'm doing some research and understanding his biographical background, this is going to sound super spiritual here, but it looks like God had his hand on Jeff Healy the entire time in some kind of special way.
He did. And Jeff never doubted that for a minute.
Really?
Never. He never doubted it. And I think when we discovered that Jeff had a sarcoma, my heart just dropped. And Derek was a month old, and we realized that Jeff was going to have surgery. And Jeff was always the calm one through all of this. And I remember him telling a very good friend of our family. He was a minister who married us. He was also at the funeral. And I've known him since I was a child. He's like an uncle to me. And he said to our very good friend, Monty Lewis, that God had seen him through so many things through his life and that he would see him through this.
I think I read that on the news update on the website. There was a blurb that Jeff had posted, and he said that very same thing.
Mm-hmm. He was very open about trusting in God on his website because he had a lot of fans writing into the website, offering support from their own experiences. And over the last few months, he was always posting updates, and he was open about trusting in God.
3 years old, he begins to play guitar? Child prodigy?
I believe so.
Roughly.
He was three when he got his first guitar for Christmas.
And then it kind of, I mean, you know, he does his guitar thing. He's the genius that he is, and he's never wrong except when he argues with Bill Carroll.
Or so the story goes with Bill,
yes,
anyway.
Yes, yeah, that's right. That's right. It all started with his four-piece band called the Blue Direction, and then it went to the Jeff Healy Band. To 1988, Grammy-nominated album See the Light, which included the major hit single Angel Eyes, which we heard at the top of the show here. And 1989, the release of the motion picture Roadhouse, huge movie with Patrick Swayze. 1990, he earns the Juno for Entertainer of the Year. And then it's kind of like he gets a little bored with rock and roll and starts Jeff Healy's Jazz Wizards.
He started that in early 2001?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was around the year that we met. He'd been playing jazz for some time before that, but as far as forming the band, it started around that time.
Well, that's when I first met him. The only time I ever met him, just a quick little handshake and, you know, typical geeky fan walking by and saying it was an honor to meet him. And the jazz band came to our hometown of Orangeville, which is, you know, Nowheresville. And I couldn't believe it that Jeff Healey was in town, so I went to this little dinner theater thing and expected him to rock and roll on the guitar. He brings out the trumpet, starts wailing on that.
Now, many people don't realize this. Some, and I've seen it written in certain biography articles in the paper or magazines, and they've said, you know, after his, you know, life of rock and roll, he decided to take up the trumpet. He was playing trumpet in high school. He's been playing trumpet since he was a kid.
I saw some early footage where Jeff was looking pretty geeky. And he was blowing on the trumpet.
He played a lot of instruments. He played the drums, piano, bass, guitar, trumpet, valve trombone. One of the funniest things
it's
that
like
I'd seen...
It's like the Dick Van Dyke of the music industry.
One of the funniest things that I had seen was there was a bass player at the club one night, just sitting with the band, and I think he was filling in, but... they kept asking him to do solo, so Jeff got up and stood behind him and got the bass player to turn the bass, the electric bass, flat. And he reached in behind the bass player's arms and stood behind him and played a bass solo and then went back and sat down.
Show off.
Well, that's what they usually said about him, but he just loved to have fun.
Oh, that's classic. Let's have a listen to some of that jazz stuff.
Yeah.
And now the purple dusk of twilight time steals across the meadows of my heart. High up in the sky the little stars climb, always reminding me that we're apart. You wander down the lane and far away, leaving me a song that will not die. Love is now the stardust of yesterday, the music of the years gone by. Sometimes I wonder why I spend the lonely night dreaming of a song. The melody haunts my reverie, and I'm once again with you. When our love was new, and each kiss an inspiration. Oh, but that was long ago. Now my consolation is in the stardust of a song beside a garden wall. When stars are bright, you are in my arms. The nightingale tells his fairy tale of paradise where roses bloom, though I dream in vain. In my heart, it will remain my stardust melody, the memory of love's refrain.
And joining us in studio today is the wife of this man playing in the background, Jeff Healey. Christy, again, it's an absolute privilege to have you here.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
We've had some fun chats on the phone.
We have.
For not knowing each other, we just kind of rambled on. That song, Stardust, apparently was one of Jeff's favorite, if not his all-time favorite, and his dad's favorite song, Sweet Little Tune, played at the funeral.
Yes, it was.
Jeff had a collection of, I've heard various reports, 25 to 30,000 78 RPM jazz records?
Well, after Jeff had passed away, a friend of his, a fellow record collector, came over, and they actually did an estimate count, and it was somewhere around 27,000, 28,000.
That's insane.
Well, just imagine trying to move them. there were about at least 10,000 pounds. We needed a separate truck. And two days to move them, one day to load and one day to unload.
I saw Jeff and Randy Bachman and Duke. Now, this guy, I don't know how to say his last name. Robillard?
I couldn't tell you.
I saw them in April of 07 at Massey Hall. And I found out about this gig through Randy's great radio show on CBC, Vinyl Tap. Randy's Vinyl Tap. Fantastic show. Saturday night, 7 to 9. Thought I'd plug it. It's tonight. I listen to it sometimes on my drive back after this. But... your husband stole the show. Okay. I wondered if it caused any friction at the end of the night. Honestly, it was like an okay show, and then Jeff just lit it up.
Yeah, that's Jeff.
And Randy said, here's a quote from Randy Bachman. He says, you can't get any tricks from him because of the way he plays. Normally when a guy's playing something, you look at it and notice, oh, yeah, he's putting his fingers there. But with him, it was like the way he was playing. It was upside down, backwards, wrong fingers. I couldn't figure anything out.
I tried to do it, too. I tried to watch him play and figure out what chords he was playing. The little guitar that I do know. And for the longest time, our son insisted that that was the only way that you play guitar. He would put it on flat on his lap, even in daycare. You know, they put on a Christmas concert, and he wanted to play the guitar, and he played it flat on his lap.
Sure,
and
like that.
Now he's starting to hold it upright a bit, but that was the only way he ever thought guitar should be played for the last year or so.
Derek has, he's 3 years old.
Yes.
And he has the same genetic mutation that Dad has.
He does. He has retinoblastoma, but we are coming up on almost 2 years that he has been tumor-free. He has been so blessed. The genetic mutation is exactly the same as Jeff's. So the doctors were quite surprised to find that it wasn't as aggressive as they were expecting. Jeff's was extremely aggressive. And I think probably around 12 or 13 tumors in all, through both eyes, in total. But what we're finding is getting to it before it gets out of hand and treating it. And we were lucky enough. We were lucky enough to know before Derek was born that he had that genetic mutation. Hmm. And they've done a lot of research and come a long way, even from before Derek's sister Rachel was born. They didn't have a test to actually check for that mutation. They could not pinpoint it in Jeff's blood until his daughter was 6 and a half. So she went through the same testing that Derek went through.
And nothing.
And they found nothing. But every time you take your child to the hospital, you're waiting to hear, you know, is it there, is it not?
Right.
We knew it was going to be there because they had developed a test to, you know, test Rachel's blood and Jeff's blood, and we knew that she didn't have the mutation. And they did an amnio on me when I was 32 weeks pregnant, and that DNA test showed that they had the mutation. So we had Derek 3 weeks
how
early.
How was that day, Chris? I mean, come
that
on.
That was a pretty sad day. That was a pretty sad day. But I think, I mean, I was mortified, and I was just, I didn't know what to expect. But I don't think anyone felt more sadness than Jeff, and he put a lot of guilt on himself for that, and he never needed to, because it was a 50-50 chance. Rachel doesn't have it, Derek does. They're both wonderful kids. They're both healthy kids. You know.
Yeah, but as a dad, you sit there and you go, I did this to
this
Derek.
This is
from me.
And he put that on himself a lot. And Jeff's children were everything to him. People talk about him being, you know, a great musician. I've heard him referred to as a music legend. And the most important thing to him in this world have always been his children.
It's more important for him to be a legend as a father.
Oh, completely. And that was a really sad day. I insisted I did not want to know the sex of the child when we were pregnant. Hmm. And they knew with Rachel, but I didn't want to know. I wanted to be surprised.
Sure.
And 2 weeks before we had Derek, he asked me, give me something good. Please just give me something good. Let me find out whether we're having a boy or a girl. Something positive. Hmm. Because after that day, it was a struggle.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, you can find out on one condition. You cannot tell anybody.
Oh, no.
My only reason for doing that, I was afraid someone would get excited and let it slip back to me.
Right.
Now, as far as, you know, all of his friends are saying, he didn't tell anybody. So I'm trusting that he didn't. and he didn't tell me, so I didn't know. But he wanted something positive, and we agreed to that. And we handled every step just a day at a time, and it was really difficult in the beginning. Having to hold your child while they're screaming and having eye drops put into their eyes and being poked and prodded and having ultrasound things on their eyes and gels, and it was by far one of the most horrible things that I think a parent has had to experience.
Yeah, that's parental torture.
From my own experience, and I know there are many parents in this world who have had to experience much worse.
Yeah.
But from my own perspective.
Sure.
But after a few of those appointments, I started to realize that if I want my son to be healthy and happy and have a good life, this is what I need to do.
Yeah.
So now I'm better with it, and Jeff became better with it. And we approached those days and those appointments with, this is what we need to do to get to here. There's a purpose. So we approached it with more confidence and more peace, and we knew that he was getting the treatment that he needed. And we had a few scary moments. The day of Jeff's second leg surgery, when they found the second tumor, he was across the street at Mount Sinai, and I was across the street at SickKids, having to discuss with the doctors whether we would try chemotherapy for Derek. So I couldn't be with Jeff while he was in his surgery. And he couldn't be with Derek while he was going into his OR appointment. And it was a scary day, but we didn't have to take the chemotherapy route. And Derek never has, and I'm staying confident that he never will.
I know that you've heard this, and probably so much that you're desensitized to it. I don't really know you at all. We've had a few nice chats. But you are an encouragement. You are. I'm such a pessimistic jerk. You think Bill Carroll is bad? There are very few people that can crack the shell. You really are. You really
Thank
are.
You.
Just before we finish, March 2nd. Can you take us back to that day?
That was I don't think anyone expected him to pass away that day. The week went fast. The week went very fast. We returned the middle of February from the Las Vegas area from alternative treatment. He was feeling really good the day after we got back. The day that we got back, he needed oxygen on the plane and a wheelchair. But the next day, he was feeling really good. And then the following week, everything just went really fast. And although even up to the day before he passed away, he was making the doctors laugh in the hospital room. So
true form.
Yes, true form. I remember one of the doctors asked him if he could stick out his tongue, and his response was no. So they knew that he could use his mouth properly. But he was keeping people laughing up until the day before. And in one of our friend's eulogies, one of the last things Jeff said to him was, I don't eat banana bread, because they were telling us, we'll be back tomorrow, we'll bring some banana bread. And he was talking to me, and Jeff overheard the conversation, so he just kind of turned and said, I don't eat banana bread. And that was the last clear sentence that he ever said to his friend.
Wow. Nice.
But March 2nd was a bit of a fog. I had been basically living at the hospital all week, and along with my father-in-law. And I can't even imagine. I mean, losing a spouse is one thing, but to lose your child, I can't imagine what he's gone through. And we were there all week, and my father-in-law said, you know what, go in the bathroom, take some time for yourself, have a shower, relax. So I did, and I'm taking a shower, and I'm thinking how peaceful it feels just to relax. And I never imagined that that would be the day that he would pass away. But luckily, I did get a chance to tell Jeff that I loved him before he went back to sleep, because he didn't regain consciousness after, I believe it was 6 o'clock, quarter after 6 in the morning. And one of his sisters had stayed overnight so that his father and I could get some sleep. We took shifts, and I was up with him around quarter after 5 in the morning, and he was a little disoriented trying to get up out of bed, and, you know, we just were making him comfortable. And I told him to get some rest, and I was going to get some sleep. And he said, okay. And I said, good night. And he said, good night. And I said, I love you. And he said, I love you too. And I kissed him, and we went to sleep. And that was, I didn't know that would be the last thing that we actually got to say to each other, but I'm glad we did.
Yeah.
But then he spent the day resting, and we had a really good Christian CD that he liked very much, and we played that the entire day, and I read his favorite scriptures to him, and a very good friend of ours, Debbie Murphy, she also did sound for him. She went down to the chapel and got some hymnals, and we actually sang to him his favorite hymn. So we wanted to make sure that he was getting everything that we knew that he loved.
What was his favorite hymn?
How Great Thou Art, and he liked In the Garden. Hmm. And he had a lot of hymns that he liked, but it was an overwhelming day, and he had a lot of family and friends there to give support, to say goodbye, and it was overwhelming that day, especially getting home and having messages on the machine of condolence when it had just been hours since he had passed away, and they were leaving condolences because they had heard it on the news. And I had forgotten. I had forgotten how public he was. Because to me, he was Jeff. He was my husband. He was the father of my son. You know, and he was my best friend. And I came home and I couldn't turn on the television because every news station that you turned on,
I remember,
it was overwhelming. And at first it was overwhelming in a horrible way because nothing felt private. But then I started to realize how many people were grieving the loss of him that didn't even know him. And that was overwhelming in a good way because I realized how many people he touched. My son was very aware in certain ways. Most times when he would visit at the hospital, he'd want me to leave the room and, you know, go do this and go do that. But the day that Jeff passed away, he came to the hospital, and I was sitting in a chair, and he just sat there with me and hugged me, and he didn't ask me to leave once. And then we got home, and at one point he asked me, Mommy, why are you sad? He's 3. But he knew. Funny, the other day we woke up and it was raining, and he said, Mommy, it's raining out. I wish we could make the rain stop. I said, well, I can't make the rain stop, sweetie. We just have to let it happen, and maybe it'll clear up later. And he said, well, Mommy, Jesus can make the rain stop. Just matter-of-factly, don't you know this?
Yeah. What are you, new?
That was basically the attitude in his voice. But, you know.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for being this encouragement that I'm sure you're fairly unaware of how much you are to others. I've heard people describe you as strong, and I think you're probably the first person to say, well, sure, I have a bit of that in my character, but there's a big God thing happening here as well.
Yeah.
Not to put words in your mouth or anything.
But there is, yeah. And I would be completely falling apart without it, I think.
Yeah. And, yeah, we're all going to miss Jeff. I mean, obviously, you will miss him more than the rest of us and his children. I mean, if Jeff, again, this is sounds a bit melodramatic, but I'm always interested to know if you had one more conversation with Jeff. If you could talk to him right now, what would you say?
Don't worry about your children, because they're going to be fine. And I know that's what he worried about the most. He was calm, and he was always concerned about the people that he was going to leave behind, because he was peaceful with where he was going. And I know where he is now. But that was his main concern. And that would be the thing that we would talk about. And we didn't, because we tried to stay positive through the entire thing, and then near the last few days, you know, he did need some pain medication, so he slept most of the time, and we really didn't get to have that conversation. But he did talk a bit to my father about it, and they had a bit of a chat. But that would probably be the one thing that I would talk with him about, not to worry about the kids.
Christy Healy on the Drew Marshall Show today. Compelling story. The journey you've had, I mean, even just the spiritual side of things is unbelievable. Let's go out with a little bit more Stardust, shall we?
Sure.
This is Jeff Healy.